you could definitely see how it's like a West Side Story, but without the two girliest things, the songs and the romance. You've got, that's West Side's, that's what Warriors is, you know?
Well, it's, there's none of the dance fighting, right?
Yeah.
Like West Side Story basically invented the dance off, only like a much more lethal version of a dance off.
And I mean that ironically, because I love West Side Story more than I like the Warriors movie. So,
and
I,
you're, you know, super which, girly. So,
well, I mean, so that's, you know, we're not going to play into the societal constructs, Jacob. We're not going to,
I will
that
do
game.
That all day long.
Welcome to The Voyage Podcast, a show that traverses the oceans of myth and legend through the lens of Catholic theology and philosophy. Come aboard as we set sail in pursuit of the heroic life and Christian virtue with your hosts, Mike Schramm and Jacob Platty.
The novel that the movie was based off of, the author was inspired by his distaste for West Side Story.
That's what I've heard. I've heard that somewhere.
Which is funny, though. Soon, Lin-Manuel Miranda is going to make a musical version of The Warriors. So it's all going to come full circle, because now it's going to have the music.
They're turning The Warriors into West Side Story.
Exactly. So it's all, yeah, it all just comes full circle again.
Did you see the the remake of West Side Story from a couple years back, Steven Spielberg?
Yeah. Yep. I did. I was
super impressed. I was so skeptical. I was like, listen, I like Steven Spielberg as much as the next guy, but this is a movie that does not need to be remade. I have no idea why this remake is going to exist.
Well, you know,
he actually did manage to, I dare say, improve on some of the set pieces.
I'm always going to, like, if it's a redo of any sort of musical, is like, I just like it, and like, I just like musicals anyway, and obviously I'm assuming that it's going to keep the same songs.
Big of you to admit that, Mike.
Yeah, big, okay, of you. So
I actually know, I'm just kidding, because I love musicals. I'm the only person I've ever met. This is why we get along.
See, we're
so
kindred
well,
spirits,
Mike.
Exactly. Yeah, this is
both
so nice.
Like musicals.
What a breakthrough for us. Yeah. So,
there's a few things where, like, I'll give you a really good example. In the original West Side Story, there's a song where they do a lot of the onomatopoeia. Onomatopoeia. There you go.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like a jazzy number that uses a lot of onomatopoeia. And it's a goofy song. It's the worst song in the entire thing. Whereas in this one, they turn that into a song about fighting over the gun. Like, there's a gun that in two factions start trying to fight over it, whether or not the gun should be brought to the fight or not. That's a genuine improvement on how it's depicted in the first movie from the 60s. So,
okay.
There's others too. There's another one.
And honestly, I didn't even like it. I'd have to rewatch the old one to even do a comparison anyway. It was very fresh in my mind when I watched the new one, because I was just like, you know, I think it was just like a rainy Saturday afternoon. My family and I, we just kind of said, oh, we're going to watch this and, you know, go from there.
So we have an episode on the Warriors, and we spend the entire time talking about West Side Story.
Saul Urich would be rolling in his grave.
Yeah, he's rolling in his grave. That's
because this is exactly what he. But again, I had to share
exactly what
how
he didn't
ironic,
want to see happen.
I had to share how ironic it was that it's coming full circle with Lin-Manuel Miranda, which that was actually what inspired this episode. Is you told me that I didn't see that. And then we were talking about it. Our families were getting together, and we were talking about it. And it was like, oh, we should do a Warriors episode. And you would kind of, you know, like, oh, it's like a spiritual journey and stuff. So,
well, yeah. Well, so we have this awesome theater in town here in La Crosse, Wisconsin, that's called the Rivoli. And it's one of my favorite little establishments here. And they play a lot of old movies. And so they do something every month called a cult night, which they have a double feature of just themed movies. So back in the summer, they had The Road Warrior and The Warriors as a double feature. It was a truly awesome double feature. But yeah, that's how we started talking about The Warriors. I hadn't watched that movie in a minute.
Same
prior
here,
to it being, you know, but it kind of is just a perfect little flick to cover along the lines of the types of themes we cover in this show, because it's a journey movie.
It's
right?
a good balance too between the nostalgia factor, but also the spiritual value, which we always try to hit upon. So,
mm-hmm.
as we'll kind of get into,
which is funny, you know, this was quite the controversial movie when it came out, Mike.
Okay,
back in the 70s, this was going to corrupt the youth. This was
sure.
This
oh,
was
very it, Socratic, it, very Socratic. It, there's a Socrates connection too. So there's a Socrates connection too. Awesome.
This is in a decade that was really, really just kind of like a dark period in pop culture. Somehow this movie hit all the parents in just like the right or wrong way, depending upon your interpretation. And there was like, you know, theaters who refused to show it and things like that. And, you know, because I guess there was still kind of parental standards back then.
I guess I kind of get it. I mean, it's 1979, so we're not talking like this came out in the 50s. You know,
no, it's
it
pretty
would have never
late
come out in the 50s
to get that kind of yeah. reaction. But
I was also I was curious when you said that. I was like, oh, was this like right after the Summer of Sam? But this is like over 10 years later, so it's not even anything like that.
No, that's not true. Actually, Summer of Sam was relatively recent. I think Summer of Sam was like 77, I'm going to say.
Oh, then maybe that's part of it too. I got my history mixed up a little bit.
Yeah. I think it just had a, it was because there was like so many gang problems. So basically, okay. really, it's like they didn't want to glorify or glamorize something that was a issue. You know, we talked about this in the Ninja Turtles episode. How yeah. New York in the 70s was overrun with like garbage and gang warfare.
They make Hollywood makes movies about
yeah,
it.
And so they make a movie about gang warfare. Well, and so and it's based upon the book that is trying to de-glorify because West Side Story was so like hip and fun. It's like, hey, gangs are fun, kids. Mm. And so he tries to write a book that talks about like the seedy underbelly of gangs. And then when that gets turned into a movie, everyone's all like, we don't want to glorify gangs. And he's yeah. like, that's it's such just, you know, pop culture is ironic like that, folks.
It's you know what? If only someone were to deconstruct it and kind of break it down and take a look like take a step back and look at it and from a wider lens, you know, then we could and then we could make movies about that, you know, and do
you
stuff
know,
like that.
And then maybe put a Christian gloss on it. Then you could have a podcast. Someone should make that podcast sometime.
Yeah, if you know what? Maybe somebody listening will come up with a good idea for a podcast on something yeah. like that.
There might be a comic book company that would be super interested in hearing your pitch. So,
I might just we'll talk after the show after we're done recording. We can get into something.
Don't
like
expect
that.
Any free T-shirts though. I mean, they're real sticklers about it. Let me tell you.
Okay, it's getting a little it's getting a little too inside baseball now.
Okay.
But anyway, isn't that what podcasts are supposed to be? So it's also based off of there was a very, very old or apparently, I guess. I think if you go to like the Wikipedia page, it'll talk about this too. But a book by
this
Xenophon,
is where Wikipedia, where Mike gets all of his background information for these podcasts.
Yeah, yeah. It's fast. So and it is
see, I have a reputation for being the lazy one, but at the end of the day, I'm just being honest. And he has the facade of you know, actually putting effort
of erudition,
into
this. The facade yes. of erudition.
Nice.
So Anabasis,
he even has a
I had to look that word up on Wikipedia. What's erudition again? So Xenophon, ancient writer, wrote Anabasis, which was supposed to be a story of kind of like you were saying, it's almost like these fighting armies, right? So they wouldn't have been called like gangs or gang warfare, but you can see how, you know, and then you have this particular group, this small group that is traveling through, kind of like trying to make their way. And so you can see very clearly how this sets up for the premise of the Warriors, which we haven't even welcomed our, you know, loyal audience to this episode of the Voyage podcast. So thank you guys for coming to, hopefully that wasn't too much opening banter. We didn't
have was that a 10 yeah. minute long opening banter?
Something like that. Yeah. So, but anyway, we're going to be talking about, if you haven't realized already, the 1979 movie The Warriors, and how this sort of becomes, you can almost say, an allegory for the pilgrimage, for the spiritual journey. And So that's
at least we're going to force that interpretation.
Or yeah, exactly.
So the best we can.
We're going to ham fist our way into it, or justify why we watched this, you know, campy 1970s, you know, whatever. It's not even super violent, but whatever. Violent movie, or a movie that glorifies gangs, according to Jacob.
Because I'll complain all day long about people misinterpreting Dracula, but I'll turn around and interpret other pieces of fiction the way I want to.
Yep. Death of the author, right?
Deal with it. One of these days we'll have an episode on Death of the Author so I can explain my rationale. Because no, I don't think I'm being hypocritical there, but it's beyond the purview of this episode. So
it's one of those things where I mean, to go back to our first episode and the inspiration, the true inspiration for this podcast and even Voyage Comics is the idea of the seeds of the word, right? From St. Justin Martyr. And so all that we're trying to do, we're not trying to like fit a round peg into a square hole. It's more, are there seeds of the word that whether the author of the Warrior's book or the director of the movie realized, they're already present there, right? This is something that it emanates from human nature, but human nature is something that emanates from the nature of God. I mean, humans are made in the image and likeness of God. And so when we do things according to, you know, even though it's a fallen human nature, it's supposed to still reflect, even if it's a very dim or shadowy reflection, the nature of God. And so we can see that in our stories, even a story like The Warriors. So how's that for an intro? Should we get right into it?
That's great. How's that for introduction?
Justification.
Quarter of the way through the episode. So what makes this a fun story is that it's what I refer to as kind of like a journey story, right? The basic principle being that you're trying to get from point A to point B. You know, because, you know, there's lots of different types of stories. They're all fundamentally about trying to achieve some kind of goal, right? There might even be there might be something that somebody came up with once that kind of is like
where
an umbrella
a hero
term.
Goes on a, journey. A hero might go on a journey of some kind. all stories are journey stories, Jacob.
This is not a journey to like go, find treasure and bring it back per se. This is the type of story where the whole point is just to like get home. Oftentimes it's just to get home, right?
But the treasure is getting home, right?
Yeah.
Or so is the treasure the friends we made along the way? That's maybe the bigger question.
You know what? We're about to find out. the obvious example of this is the Odyssey. Right. If you go to like classic examples of what I would refer to as like a journey story, right? Yeah. There's a few ones that just are immediately obvious. The Odyssey is kind of like the par excellence version. You could say like the Divine Comedy, which is going to be it's all about just traveling through the cosmos and seeing God at the end of it.
The Divine Comedy is, not just me, but it's one of the greatest works of not just Christian literature, but obviously Western literature. And even from a, you know, quote unquote secular viewpoint, it does perfectly kind of hit that hero's journey that we've kind of been talking about or joking about. Obviously from a Christian standpoint, it sees very clearly where our true origin is and where our true end is in God. Mm-hmm. So that would be my sort of pick. But we got to do an episode on the Divine Comedy, so I'm not going to talk too much.
These types of stories were actually fairly popular. Well, they're popular in every age. There's a few examples from like medieval times that are obvious to me too. Like, have you ever heard of the Saint Brendan the Navigator story?
He got here before Columbus did. he got here before, got to the, what, you know, North America. Well, or
that turned into, like a medieval epic where like he, and it's kind of the inspiration for like the Voyage of the Dawn Treader by C.S. Lewis, where like they travel from island to island and each island has its own like little adventure and things like that. So, Jacob, Odyssey-like, you know.
You didn't realize this, but one of the Voyage classics is the Legends and Heroes book that was written by, I believe, Andrew Lang, and that includes St. Brendan the Navigator story. Yeah, so look at that. It's an accidental plug on your part. You're doing
your
job.
Go out there and get 30 copies of that book. Give it to all of your, you know, relatives.
Or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So
buy it for your church. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. Yep. Yeah.
So your whole church wants to read that book, folks. I promise you.
Because you'll just say this. Jacob Claddy recommended this. So
talk to who's in charge of your church bookstore and make some stuff happen.
Nothing like I heard this on a podcast to ringingly endorse. It's like, oh, great. Eye roll. Yeah. Go ahead.
You know, well, all right. So another example, though, from medieval times, this type of a story is actually all the stuff, the legends around Alexander the Great. This is another really good example in my mind, because that one, he's trying to find the edge of the world. Right. And so like this is, and it's rooted in history. It's him trying to explore India and things like that. And so like you have another example of someone going on a journey, trying to get to the end points, and having all these kind of miscellaneous adventures and running into these different people types or situations along the way. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you go and watch that, it was like a Oliver Stone Alexander movie. You ever
seen Colin Farrell one?
The Colin Farrell one. No one likes it.
Talks so bad about
it. Yeah. Everyone hates it. I mean, I'm a sucker for historical epics no matter what. And so like, I own it. I own it on Vudu. He does a pretty good job of showing him kind of traveling east and things like that. But they made all kinds. There's all kinds of fancy legends about that. He meets people that don't have heads. You look at like a medieval manuscript, their heads are like in their chest, you know? Mm. So men without heads.
Oh, C.S. Lewis. Yeah, I was actually going to bring up Don Treadle again, because it sounds very much like Don Treadle, which obviously Don Treadle came after the fact, but C.S. Lewis was a medievalist. I mean, he would have been like, that was not only his professional focus, but I mean, just his whole like persona, his whole brand was all about not just the medieval times, but like the medieval focus on the classics too, which was, again, very much Lewis was all about too.
Do you have any other pop culture references you want to knock out when it comes to these? There's a million journey stories.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Exactly. We missed some really big one, you know, The Hobbit.
I remember as a kid watching, do you remember The Homeward Bound, where you have the two dogs and the cat?
Heck,
who get
lost
and have to find their way. You know, they like,
that was such a popular movie when we were kids. Yeah. Man, that was one of my VHS tapes.
I think we ended up showing that to our kids. I think it might be on like Disney Plus or something. I think it is. I think we came across it.
It's got a real like tearjerker ending to it, you know, where it's like you're really on the edge of your seat as a child. Those types of movies from back when I was growing up, you know, like the Don Bluth cartoons, yep. Land Before Time. That's a kind of a classic journey story, you know.
I can't remember how many sequels they made, but I remember at least the first one watching that cartoon.
Yeah, they made like 12 of them. It was quite a bit.
So I saw you mentioned this. I didn't actually think of this one, but you put Never Ending Story, which I've seen that one I watched that one a lot as a kid too.
So Never Ending Story, yeah, that's a, we should do, I mean, that's, we should do an like entire episode story on Never Ending Story.
You know what that reminds me of? You almost get like an adult version of that. In, did you ever read Neil Gaiman's Stardust? Or watch the
I haven't gotten around to reading it yet, but I have seen the movie Once Upon a Time.
I was disappointed by the movie, but a lot of it doesn't really fit the book. The book is, and it's a very easy, it's a short read too, but it's very much a fairy story. Like
I basically have like no memories of the movie, to be honest, so it didn't make it has much a, of a impact.
It has
on
a
me.
Young Henry Cavill, a young Superman. And
does
a
it
young,
really?
And a young Daredevil, a young Charlie.
Yeah,
Cox,
that's
too.
What I was about to say. Yeah, it's Charlie,
I think that
Cox,
was his first big movie, actually. Probably was that one. But anyway, Superman and Daredevil in The Godfather and Robert De Niro.
it's also got Catwoman. It's got Michelle Pfeiffer, right?
I know. Like,
this is an all star cast, to be honest.
I mean, De Niro's character, his was kind of like, it seemed like his was a little forced in because he doesn't really fit the character from the book that well. And even the character in the book is barely in it. And so he's not really in the movie much, but anyway, it doesn't matter. Let's keep moving.
Let's get around to finally talking about the Warriors, right? Like, I guess we should. I mean, that is what we promised. Which, hey,
I enjoyed reading your notes on this, actually. This was, I mean, because this was definitely more detailed.
Dude.
Yeah.
There's a ton of symbolism in this movie. We probably shouldn't have wasted the first 20 minutes of this podcast considering how much we could talk about the Warriors. The audience probably thinks I'm like trying to stall or something like that because I don't have anything to say.
No, but no, not, this is, I mean,
not today. Today.
Well, yeah, I'll kind of get us rolling. So you have this opening, like this big, like you mentioned, New York is just like full of all these gangs or whatever, but all these gangs are coming together for this huge, I guess we'll call it gang con or, you know, conference of some kind.
Gang con.
And
yeah, sure.
You have this very charismatic leader named Cyrus, which I think is symbolic in some ways too. But Cyrus, who there's like this rumor that he's going to like bring together to reconcile all the gangs. Like he's going to create this truce or whatever, peace in the city, right? He's the Prince of Peace.
He is. Yes, 100%.
And you know, this is where I had to write this down, because this is one of the things that stood out to me when I saw this movie first as a kid, was the iconic line, "Can you dig it?"
And, "Can you dig it?" is what I think you meant to say.
Yeah, exactly. I don't have the courage that you do when it comes to performing. So I only
gave that half of what it should have gotten too, you guys are aware. But
got to do justice to the movie. But yeah. So you have this charismatic leader who, again, just that's an iconic line from the movie. There's two iconic lines, basically. There's that one, and then we'll get to the other one later, probably even more so. But what happens is, again, it's you think, oh, great, you know, things are all going to go well. And then he gets shot.
He gets shot.
I think his arms are even outstretched like cruciform.
He's totally cruciform when it happens.
So he's supposed to be a Jesus figure, and, you know, he falls. He's super messianic.
Yeah.
And that's what sort of kicks off our conflict a little bit.
Yeah. Well, all right. So basically, and this is kind of like a fun, you know, for all of who's the author's name again? I just don't have it in my head.
Saul Urich, I believe.
Yeah, Saul Urich. For all of Saul Urich's talk about how he wanted to, like, he thought that like the West Side Story like was too silly. He populates his world with what I can only imagine.
They're caricatures.
Not as gritty as what it was in real life.
Well,
because
that's what tells you that this is a myth, is because these are archetypes. Like all of these gangs are, you know, they're archetypes.
When you get everyone, all right, so everyone's got a theme. All of the gangs in this movie have these outrageous themes, frankly. So there's like the baseball guys. I should have looked up like the actual names of these people.
That's gonna have to be the album art or the episode art is like the baseball guys, but you know,
yeah,
because they're so ridiculous. Yeah,
there's mimes. The Warriors. Go on. Yeah.
Yeah. The Warriors are like, I guess, the most normal ones, which kind of makes sense.
They're like Native American garbed. They're like. Yeah, they're like engines.
They kind of just look like hippies, which I guess in it's still 1979. Maybe that's the most normal looking, you know?
Yeah, I mean, compared to like the mimes, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
okay, that I forgot about that. Those are on the subway, I think.
If anything, like the rogues aren't that? Isn't that the bad guys? Like, there's like an ultimate enemy gang.
Yeah, I don't.
I'm pretty
really
sure they're the rogues
either.
They look like the leather clad, like kind of like biker gang type, even though they don't ride motorcycles. So I guess instead it makes them look like they're just like really big fans of like the village people, and like they just like cottoned on to the one guy in leather. they're like, so each gang has their own theme, you know, and so when you get all these gangs together, they're all in like different get-ups and things like that. And the rest of the movie, all right, so what happens is Cyrus, the messianic figure, who's bringing everyone together, and he's going to usher in this like gangland utopia for all like the disenfranchised latchkey kids of New York. He gets shot immediately by a member of the Rogues. But the Rogues immediately spread word and get the rumor started that the Warriors are the ones who killed him. And so the rest of the movie is them trying to get back to Coney Island from deep in the heart of New York City. They're at Central Park. And so they have to travel east to get back to their home of Coney Island, where they're safe on their own home turf. And they have to make their way through all the different territories populated by all these like fancy, you know, gang types. And that's the story in a nutshell.
They have to go on the monorail. They have to walk through the park. They have to go, you know, I was almost thinking it's almost like, what is that called? The Lotus, like the Odysseus, they're stuck on that island and guys turn into hogs or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then the Circe one too, but it reminds, like, it very much, it gives you that vibe as they go through these different locations.
Oh yeah. You know? There's one, I mean, there's, there's a lesbian gang actually. So you gotta think like the Amazons, you know, like from Greek myth, you know, like this islands of female warrior women, or like the sirens from Odysseus, because what happens is they lure in some of the warriors. They tempt them. They
for like
seduce
an ambush,
them away from their journey. You know what I mean? And so it's very siren-like, right? Mm-hmm. So this movie is just exceptionally like mythic in the way it like portrays its journey and things like that. But there's lots of meat on these bones, you know, as we go through it.
I love what you included about, so yeah, like it's almost like the only motivation, which, you know, I was telling you the last time we recorded that I just watched Scream, and I said it's the millennium, motives are incidental, and I included that because that's exactly what the rogues say, right? Is they just wanted to cause chaos.
Yeah,
wanted to cause disorder, and that was the only, they had nothing against Cyrus, they had nothing even against the warriors, they were just the convenient, and you use this word too, scapegoat. They were the scapegoat.
The warriors were, yeah, the scapegoat, yeah, for sure. So they become the, you know, the, because there's true believers in Cyrus within the warriors, you know what I mean? And so what you really get is this kind of parallel with like Christians who believe in their messianic figure, you know, becoming the object of ridicule for the rest of the empire. You know, it would have been an empire under Cyrus, which, you know, his name Cyrus, that's a Persian emperor, you know what I
from
mean?
From the Old Testament.
Yeah. And so, but you get this idea that like they are the scapegoat. So they almost have this like, and they have to go through like the tunnels, you know, the subway system and all that stuff, trying to make it to their promised land, you know, out in Coney Island and things like that. You know, the rogues, it's even in their name, right? Like the name of the gang that kills Cyrus, they're not the warriors, you know, they're not like the baseball players or whatever. Like they're the rogues.
See,
like,
everybody should have known right from the beginning to blame.
Yeah.
They should have exactly known. It's like, it was obvious.
They should just call themselves the bad guys and just like been done with it, you know.
It would have been much easier.
They're anarchic. They're anarchic. They're in within the Christian sensibility. They're demonic. You know what I mean? They're just agents of chaos.
They're the scatterers. I mean, look at that opening scene. It's literally scatterers.
Yeah, they create chaos. You have a kind of hierarchy forming that's going to bring everything together, to use some like Pajonian language. And everyone's sitting peacefully amongst themselves. These people should be killing each other because they're all like different gang territory people. But instead there's peace, right? He's literally brings peace to all these people, and it's the rogues that blow it up.
Like, I believe, you know, one of us cleverly called him a Prince of Peace, I think is what the,
Nice. That's right. Very clever, man. Oh man.
In the back of that one.
But, you know, so the actual cast of warriors, you get like 7 or 8 guys that are part of like the kind of like ambassadors that come out to this Cyrus project. And they're the ones that have to make it back home. And each of those people have like kind of different personalities. Some are sketched a little lighter than others. But what's really interesting, especially initially, is you have two really important figures. There's the main character of the flick. His name is Swan. And then you have another prominent member of the group. His name is Ajax.
Which, that's another reference to Greek mythology.
Ajax, yeah.
The warrior.
Famously, right? Famous warrior in the Iliad. You know, really what's interesting about these two is Swan is like the kind of like reasonable one. But Ajax is the hothead. Right. And so as soon as what happens immediately is you have like the guy who is in charge of the gang, let's see here. His name was, I wrote this guy's name down. Warchief. Warchief is actually the name of the guy that is leading the group. Swan has to take his place because he gets immediately dispatched in the, you know, aftermath of like the peace talks being broken apart. And so now you have a question of who's going to take charge of this group of people on their way back to Coney Island.
And it's a classic, like, thrust upon leader too. Like, he's kind of put in this position as well.
Well, and Swan and Ajax both kind of like step up. Like, I'm the one that should lead us back. And, you know, you basically have Swan, and he's kind of like the reasonable one. He's kind of like the natural leader that everyone kind of knows should be in charge. But Ajax has like the strength and the determination, and like, you know, he's all passionate and angsty and things like that. But people kind of like see Pat, like, you know, you're not reasonable enough to lead us. But you know what? There's a nice little allegory. There's a nice little allegory for the role of reason and how it's more important than passion in our lives.
The soul being the form of the body. Yeah.
You know.
It's so Christian, Jacob. It's like, did St. Thomas Aquinas make this movie? Because
yes, little that known was, fact. That's,
yeah, exactly.
Yes, this is the what is it, the fifth part? Would it be the missing fifth part of the Summa?
So is, technically, there's only three parts. Technically, there's only three parts, but there is a quote unquote fourth part called the supplement, which was finished by his students after he stopped writing and then he died. So there really should only be three parts, but the fourth would, because it's a complete set with the three. You've got God in part one, humanity in part two, and then Jesus in part three. That's the St. Thomas Aquinas takes us on a hero's journey, actually, through his Summa. But that's a whole different conversation, Jacob.
I'm trying not to. I should have never brought it up. Way to take my joke and turn it into something boring, Mike.
It's like, oh, great, school. Like, that we were talking about a movie here.
Yeah, right. So in the idea that they're trying to make it back to Coney Island, right? How it's a fair, it's a festival. It's Coney Island. It's a place of like fun and joy, and it's on the ocean, right? So like you have like this decrepit city, like the world, you know what I mean? And what they need to do is make it to the beach.
The innocence,
where it's sunny,
but also
and it's
the liminal ocean, you know. Space. Yeah.
It's well, and it's like eternal, you know, it's like the horizon point. Exactly. Yeah. It's like the unending ocean of eternity, where it's a fair, you know, and like, you know, corn dogs and Ferris wheels and things like that. So you get a lot. And it's also the easternmost point, right? So like they got to travel east to get to paradise, right? So, yeah, and the entire journey there is going to be through the kind of like the dark city, you know what I mean? So it's almost got like a Divine Comedy-esque thing going for
and
it. Where
another
like
one you mentioned too,
to get to
the
heaven.
Pilgrim's Progress. It kind of gives that sort of
yes, exactly.
Pilgrim's
right.
Progress as well.
Very Pilgrim's Progressy. That's another really good example for sure. As they go, there is a DJ. And the DJ is speaking incognito, like, for all to hear, only if you have like ears to hear kind of thing, what the message is, because she is couching it. Yeah. Well, she's couching it, her messages to the people in just like DJ talk. But the gangs understand that like she's giving them directions on like where the war she's keeping track of,
because everybody still assumes the warriors are responsible. And that's sort of part of this process, is not just getting them home to safety, but it's also vindication, right? There's also a vindication that needs to happen. You know, the good guys need to, again, it's very sort of, they kind of take on this Jesus role where he's the one seen with scorn when he's on the cross. But as Psalm 21 says, he will be vindicated, right? And obviously we see that in Jesus's resurrection. So when they get back, that's when, and you know, not to jump too far ahead, but that's what we start to kind of see at the end.
Well, and it's true. Yeah. We got like the, so as they're traveling, they engage with all these different kind of, temptations, right. Or passions, you know, all the different characters that, you know, the gangs or the circumstances that they find themselves in,
The circles of hell.
They lend themselves very readily to allegorical interpretation. And so the movie can be interpreted just like any good journey story can be interpreted as basically a journey of the soul, right? The transformation of the inner life and things like that. And so as they are traveling, the first thing they do, speaking of like Divine Comedy type stuff, is they meet the orphans, Mike. So one of the first gangs that they encounter, it's kind of like Limbo. Like these are the people who they're not cool enough to be recognized. They weren't even invited to the table of the peace talks. They were left out because they have absolutely no social status at all, right? So they're kind of these outsiders, you know, that don't belong in heaven or hell. You know,
they're neither not hot nor cold. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. They're just losers that no one cares about, no one wants to think about, kind of thing. It's this very like Limbo-esque.
And they adopt one of them, right?
Well, and Mercy, name's Mercy, is a female character that comes from this, you know, ring of hell, so to speak, where, and she's hilarious because she's basically, remember how at the beginning of the episode you were talking about how you weren't going to get involved with like gender stereotypes or whatever?
Well, that was just because, you know,
we're going all the way into gender roles.
I just didn't want to get so far into the whole idea that I like musicals so much. So anyway, I was trying to draw attention away from that, Jacob. Yeah,
self-serving anyway. As usual.
Exactly. But as you were, Mercy. Yeah, so
she becomes a really, really important character throughout this. Almost like Beatrice is kind of like a driving force in the Divine Comedy. Mercy is not a good Beatrice. I don't want to push that analogy too far, but she is very much an instigating character that is responsible for a lot of the actions and the plot points that occur. So as they're trying to get to Coney Island, you know, their little slice of paradise, she shows up and becomes an antagonist for ultimately like growth, right? But in such a way that if you're looking at the traditional classical storytelling role of like men and women, you know, women are either villainous to the male because they are temptress or they're witchy, or, you know, they're a stumbling block, so to speak, for the person's journey, or they are positive, inspirational, right? So
they're like the civilizing force.
They become the reason to improve. They become the reason to, you know, go on the journey to begin with, right? And Mercy, the character, she's both. She's both. And so you can look at her as either like a harsh Mercy, because sometimes God gives us what we don't want in order to get us on the right path, or as like a positive Mercy, because sometimes God gives us mercy when we don't deserve it. Right.
In spite of the decisions.
Yeah. Sure. And so she is both in this movie. Because when she shows up, she is the worst, right? She is not introduced as like a positive character. She's introduced as someone like they're about to like make amends with the orphans, you know? They're like, hey, we just got to like make it through your guys' territory. You know, we think you're pretty cool. Like, and the orphans are all like, oh, you think we're cool? And they're like, dude, we think you're totally cool. And the orphans are like, okay.
Like a good, strong feminine character. She calls them on their BS, right?
And then right as they're about to go, you honestly, like, you feel for the warriors. Like, you know exactly what they want to do to this chick, right? In the context of the movie, because she shows up right as they're about to just like walk on through, and she's like, you're really gonna. And so she becomes the classic like hen pecking woman who is like, you can't. What about your honor? What about your integrity? No one's going to respect you if you just let these people walk through your territory, and just completely dismantles the peace talks that the orphans and the warriors had just like came to accord with, you know? And then ironically ends up getting quasi kidnapped, quasi like, this is the other thing. This is what's so hilariously stereotypical about this female role is she completely blows up the peace talks, but then she prefers to go with the warriors. Yeah. So not only does she start by saying
honor either.
She talks a big game about like the honor of the orphans or whatever, but then she's like, ah, just kidding, you guys suck, and like goes and just goes with the stronger looking warriors, right? So she's very you know, what you would call stereotypically,
I think,
catty, right? Opportunistic, catty, you know, these are, for better or for worse, I mean, don't hate the player, hate the game, folks.
This is just the movie. Yeah,
These are story tropes. These are female archetypes within stories, and Mercy is all of the female archetypes in this story. Mm-hmm. So she goes and she makes lots of trouble for the warriors, but then she accompanies the warriors and becomes something of a, well, frankly, she's a troublemaker all the way through, but she also becomes something of a redemptrix, right? I guess to use some good old fashioned Catholic language there.
Very good. I was gonna say,
like that? she becomes a Beatrice type character. She becomes someone that inspires Swan to become more civilized. Oh, she turns the ugly duckling into a swan. And that's not necessarily a straight path. It's really funny because she really is kind of an obnoxious character throughout this movie. I guess I'll just say it's a really, really funny line is she's also seductress, right? So she's always trying to like, and so how does this even happen? I forget exactly the details, but somehow she ends up becoming the reason why the gang gets split up. Oh no. All right. Hey, I tell you what, should we finish talking about Mercy? Yeah, we'll finish talking about Mercy and then we'll get back into kind of summarizing the events of the movie.
Yeah.
So my bad, folks, whatever. This is going to be nonlinear. But, you know, he has this line where he's like, why don't you just tie a mattress to your back?
I know. I chuckled at that one, too. It's a little bit coarse.
It's pretty coarse. You know. Yeah. But that's the way these kids are talking, you know? Yeah. They're bad gang members. And he rejects her because she's trying to tempt him and lead him astray. And he actually rejects her and he focuses on getting home and things like that. So it's this moment in the movie where she is playing the villainous female role and it gives him an excuse to gain virtue. It gives him an excuse to, you know, practice virtue, things like that. Mm. And, you know, that ultimately pays off. Of course, not very long later, she gets truly ingratiated into the gang because eventually they run into some unsavory characters and there's a big fight between this gang and the warriors. And she actually becomes, this is the time where she like becomes a member of the gang and she participates in the fight with the warriors against the other gang.
It's kind of a no turning back moment because now she's implicated with them and they've had targets on their back the whole movie. So it's sort of like, at this point, you might as well join with them because everybody assumes that you're with them anyway.
Yeah, kind of at that point, up until that point, she had been a thorn in their side. Well, that's the point where she becomes a benefit, where she chooses to be one of them. And the rest of the movie, there's a much more softer relationship between Swan, the leader, and Mercy, right? There's a moment where they are on a subway, they catch a break and they're actually taking like a long subway ride that's going to take them finally to Coney Island, right? When they do so, though, they're all sitting, they're haggard. It's been a long night. They're all kind of beat up. And a bunch of yuppies, like coming home from prom, it looks like, get on the subway with them and sit across the seat from them. And so you have these upper crusters and the glammed up girls, you know, kind of giggling or whatever. Then they kind of like look across the way and notice who they're sharing a car with. And it's these, you know, kind of bums. And Mercy, she gets all self-conscious, right? And she starts to like fiddle with her hair and starts trying to, you know, subtly like fix herself up a little bit. And Swan, he like arrests her hand. He stops her from doing it. And so it's this moment of like honor for his lady and things like that. Where he's
no need to be ashamed. And yeah, he sees her for, and in a good way, sees her for who she is or whatever, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He affirms her dignity as a person, right? And her value and things like that. And it's not about appearances and things like that. So it's a nice little moment. It's a nice little nod. When they finally get to Coney Island, they get to the beach. By this point, Cyrus's gang has been hunting for these guys all night. They show up right at the same time that the rogues show up. And
you can't skip over the other iconic line, though, Jacob, which is they're in pursuit. Yeah. It's the drink, 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 come out to play. I almost said come, and play.
Oh, you wait, you don't, you're not willing to come out and play. Yeah. You really are going to make me do all the actual impressions, you know, aren't you?
We'll just put a YouTube. We'll just put a link to the YouTube. You can watch it on there. If you want. But no, again, it's the other iconic line: the come out to play, where it progressively gets higher and higher and very unsettling. Because
it's creepy.
And the other and at this part too is the rogues have a car, whereas the warriors have been traveling basically on foot, or like you said, I think this might even be before the subway. I can't remember, but. Either way, there's definitely a power dynamic that it obviously adds to the creepiness, adds to the threat as well. But you were kind of coming up to the beach, so I we can kind of...
well, and there's not much... There. Basically, right as there's going to be like this kind of final confrontation with evil, right? The Cyrus gang shows up and is informs...
Well, and they're gonna mete out justice because they just want to want there to be justice. So they become kind of like the judge at the end of time, sort of, or I guess the Minos character if we're still talking Dante. But they mete out whoever it is. They're fine with whoever. They just have to, you know, it just has justice.
It's not personal for them. Yeah, it's like they're just incorporating justice or whatever. And so basically. You know, it's funny. I'm kind of blanking on this. Like, how is it that it's revealed that the warriors weren't responsible for it? Was it just that the rogue's main bad guy guy? He just like acknowledges it. He's like, I totally pinned it on you guys. And he doesn't realize that the Cyrus gang members have been like slowly slinking up and like overhear him admitting it. I think that's what happens, isn't it?
I know. It's something where it's not, you know, they didn't overthink it, I guess, when it came to.
Well, it's because evil always consumes itself, Mike. At the end of the day, evil will always be its own destruction.
I just didn't have eyes to see, but you're right. I was right there the whole time. So
and then the Eagles start playing, you know, as they all kind of like walk off into the sunset.
Well, and I think they do actually like execute, don't they execute the
they do
like
well, I don't think they do it on camera though. I was making the joke that they should have been playing Journey instead of the Eagles. I know.
That's such a missed opportunity. They probably tried and they just couldn't get the rights to it or something, but although the Eagles were, it's like you probably had to go with the popularity. I mean, the Eagles were probably the biggest.
I mean, Journey was pretty big in the late 70s. And so Mercy and Swan, they kind of walk off into the sunset together, having reached, you know, the liminal space that is the ocean and all that stuff.
He's
and
the
so
master of two worlds now.
Exactly. Yes.
He's achieved the boon.
But some of the things that we missed in kind of focusing on like Mercy's arc is just to go back through to the rest of the journey, right? Like the rest of the warriors, because they slowly get picked off. Right. So you have all these examples of other gang members just not making it to the end of the journey. Right. And so the first guy, funnily enough, I think is Ajax, passion, the guy that kind of reflects passion and angst and all that stuff in the gang. Mm. They're going through the park. They've just gotten past the baseball guys, which it hits me. Their name are the Furies, the baseball Furies.
Which, so, I mean, they're, again, that's mythological, right there.
The Furies, right? Exactly. Yeah, this stuff is just littered with mythological reference in here.
I mean, this outline writes itself, basically, right?
It really does. Yeah. While they do manage to get past the Furies, there is a female seductress on the park bench. And so while the gang's got to have singular vision to get back home, Ajax cannot control his passions. Mm. And he's like, you guys go on without me. I'm going to spend a little time with this lady. And it's an undercover cop. Right. And so he actually gets imprisoned. He is a prison to his passions, Mike. Gets chained. Exactly. Indeed. His passions have chained him up.
But I guess that's kind of how it
goes.
Well,
because in the world, in this weird kind of Wonderland world of the Warriors, you know, you can't take the good and the bad so kind of black and white. Like the cops, they don't necessarily
represent, already turned on its head. Yeah.
Yeah.
They just represent a threat. They don't necessarily represent, oh, they're the, you know, protectors or whatever.
So. Well, and you know, while specifically the park scene where Ajax gets, you know, kind of imprisoned, she is an undercover police officer, but she's an undercover police officer, right? Whereas later in the movie, you'll have police officers that are not undercover that are going to exhibit their own kind of threat to the gang. And this is going to be that kind of like, they represent like the crushing weights of civilization. You know what I mean? Mm. So you have, this is almost like a Peterson type tyrannical father type thing, you know, because they are callous, uncaring. They're kind of dehumanized. They're just like jackboots almost, you know?
Yeah.
Just uniformed officers, and they actually are the responsible for the death of one of the gang members. So in the struggle, this is taking place on a subway platform. They end up, you know, chucking him in front of a train that's coming up, you know? So when they are confronted by this kind of like harsh authoritarian figures, you know, one of them actually meets his demise.
They turn their body cams off and yeah.
Yikes. Yeah. Let's see here. Probably another, maybe my favorite because it's funny, I don't know, is the aforementioned lesbian gang. The let's see here. Did I write down the name of these people?
The Lizzies.
The Lizzies,
which I mean, I know it's like a little bit on the nose, but,
it's funny. It's the allegory, Warriors don't pick up on this, right? So because what happens is like they're walking through the territory and, you know, they run into the Lizzies and the Lizzies are like, hey, your guys are cute. You should come up to our apartment with us. And they seem to just buy that. They're just like, oh, I guess these that makes Lizzies. Sense.
This checks out. Yeah.
This checks. This tracks, right? you end up, by this point, Swan and Mercy have, they've continued forward because of Ajax, stick behind the park. Some of the gang members split off to go back and find Ajax, right? And it's those same gang members that end up running into the Lizzies. And so you can almost
turn
argue
back and they turn into a pillar of salt.
Yeah.
They kept their eyes off the prize. Yes, it's all, exactly. I mean, it's like,
well, and it's interesting that it's the same kind of like passion of lust and things like that, that derail them, you know? So they're like the children Ajax's chickens have come home.
They weren't
to
going
roost.
Back for him. They were going back to see if she had any friends that she had brought with.
Yeah, I suppose. You know, when they're up there though, this becomes an important, plot point. The one who is uncertain about it, cause you have three of the individuals, two of them are whole hog in on what they're trying to get done. But one of them is like, this doesn't feel right. This doesn't make sense. I'm not so sure about this. And he's the one that overhears the DJ lady, mentioning like feeding information. And he's the one that realizes the reason why everyone's trying to kill us is because they think that we killed Cyrus. So he actually gets information that's important for the understanding of the journey by experiencing this kind of thing. But he only does it because he has kept himself vigilant. And the others have not, right?
He had his lamp trimmed, I think, to use another parable.
That's right.
I'm telling you, it's like they're all over the place. Like, you can't take two steps without stumbling across another, allegory or parable reference. So
100%, man. They manage to go run off. They reconvene, and that's when we meet up with the rest of the story about how they managed to make it to Coney Island finally and things like that. I'm pretty sure one of them at least gets stuck at the apartment with the Lizzies. So that's another example.
It's hard. And again, a lot of them are just kind of like faceless. Like, they're just, they're allies. Mm-hmm. They're important because they're warriors. But it's really about Swan and Ajax. Like, and even once Ajax is down, it's really just about Swan and Mercy.
It's Swan's
right?
journey. Yeah. It's Swan's journey and Mercy's effect on him and stuff like that. And him, getting to where he needs to go. So there is a great example of a journey story that is just kind of a fun movie. It's definitely, an R-rated film from the 70s. So,
it could definitely have been like worse in terms of...
From this podcast episode. Well,
and I will, not that it's like a recommendation in terms of the subject matter of the content, but it definitely could be worse as well. But it's one of those where it's just, use prudence, use caution, and all that. I do love, as much as I loved talking about this and finding the references, as important as the movie is, it's actually not even as good as the parodies of the Warriors. Have you ever come across any of those that I included?
I don't know. I'd have to think about it.
So give me some examples. Obviously, you're obviously going to have characters in various like movies and TV shows where they'll do their come out to play thing. Right. Mm-hmm, but one example, did you ever watch the TV show Community?
Yeah.
So they do a Warriors. Community is known for one of the most iconic episodes are the paintball episodes. Mm-hmm. And they
I remember a paintball episode. I didn't watch the entire series, and so I'm not sure.
They did like one per season for a while. Like, they'd always do it like towards the season finale. You should finish the series. It's really, really good. But because the show is already known for being so meta, right? And one of the characters, if you're familiar, he's all about movie references and TV show references. But they make one of their paintball episodes. It has a Warriors sort of theme where they have to travel, across the campus. And they even do somebody with the whole Warriors come out to play. so that's a really good one. The Simpsons have a Warriors episode. It's in one of the, I guess it'd be almost in the 20-ish seasons. I can't remember, but it's called The Winter of His Content. So you've got a little bit of a Shakespeare line in there too. But this is a really, really good one. So the kids show, they did a reboot of the DuckTales kids show.
Mm-hmm. Right? I've seen a few episodes of that. Yeah.
So in the reboot, they have one called The Beagle Birthday Breakout. And what the kid DuckTales characters, they sneak into one of the Beagle Boys. It's the mom's birthday party, but they have to escape and get back home. So there's your Warriors premise. But because it was a Beagle family birthday party, you have all the different Beagles from all these different places. So it's like the various gangs.
That's hilarious.
And as they travel back, they do a really good job with that one. That one's a funny one. And you can find that one too. The Beagle Birthday Breakout is so that's some of the, again, Warriors is referenced in a lot of things. If it's just the quotes themselves, the can you dig it, the come out to play. But the premise, because like you said, it's a ubiquitous premise. Every movie has a journey.
Yeah, these are,
but going through the different trials, that's
kind of episodic. Anytime you come across a story where you got to get to the final destination and you have all these episodic, circumstances, and there's usually some kind of allegorical, lessons learned or something like that, these are pretty common, and the Warriors is a really good example of it.
So, this was, there's obviously some surreal moments, but I feel like we covered a lot of those and definitely, like you said, there is a, not that it has to be obvious Christian parallel or allegory. I mean, not that we're assuming that anybody was trying to do that, but it's unavoidable. Like I said, you can't take two steps in this story without coming across some parable from the Gospels, some, eternal truth about spirituality or specifically about Christianity. It's just, that's, it's one of this that makes it, at least if not a great movie, a very enjoyable movie.
It's fun. For sure. It's fun. And you know what? I don't think anyone was inspired to go join a gang of mimes afterwards. So all of that fear was, you know, unfounded, it turns out.
Yeah, if that's the case, then there's definitely some other precedents. If that was the last, if that was the turning point, was watching the movie, then you have to really go back more to the.
That's what pushed them over the source, edge.
To the cause for that. So,
admittedly, well, yeah, if dancing wasn't your thing, and so if West Side Story wasn't going to convince you, maybe all the fanciful, you know, costumes of the Warriors would have been what got you. So
I gotta say, I am looking forward to the musical. I mean, anything Lin-Manuel
Miranda does,
it's gonna be entertaining.
Yeah, for sure. I'll check it out.
Yeah, this premise, like we said, because it's so mythological, you know, that reminds me of another really good, and it's more overtly mythological, but have you ever seen Hadestown or listened to Hadestown, the soundtrack for that one?
No.
Okay, we'll have to talk about that. We'll have to talk about that musical. That's another one. But anyway, okay. we'll cut this off and save our listeners any more of this, you know, banter. Thank you guys for coming to or listening to this episode of the Voyage Podcast. We always enjoy, you know, hearing from you guys. But obviously, like, if you want to hear more conversations like this, we want to get this out to more people, to more listeners. So if you could please leave us a 5-star rating, a positive review. And share this episode or any episode that you've enjoyed with your friends, family, people you think might be interested in these types of conversations. We'd, especially Jacob, you know, he's very sensitive. We'd really appreciate it.
Don't stop believing. Hold on to that feeling.
Nice and high, too. What octave is that? I didn't even know that one existed.
Thanks for listening to Voyage Podcast. The Voyage Podcast is a production of Voyage Comics and Publishing, which seeks to create exceptional entertainment informed by Catholic values that inspire people to live a heroic life. Voyage Comics seeks to advance truth and beauty found in powerful stories. To learn more, visit voyagecomics.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram